alike, welcome in to Braving the Elements, Nickelodeon's podcast about all things Avatarverse. I'm Janet Varney.
And I'm Dante Bosco.
So this week, we have a very special live stream episode for y'all. This was something that we did on Twitch. It was recorded live with our Twitch audience. And we were also joined by, of course, the incredibly talented and charming Dee Bradley Baker.
And you might notice that it sounds a little different than what you're used to, but I have to say it was so much fun.
Oh my gosh.
And a little embarrassing.
You guys definitely are going to enjoy what's about to happen. Let's just say it that way. We know what you're in for right now. And let's just say stay with it because it is embarrassing to us. And speaking of other fun times, last week we got to know some freedom fighters, hang in some Lost Boys-esque tree houses, and meet a character that was so iconic, his name alone was the episode title, Jet.
And we got to catch up with Crawford Wilson, who played him.
So awesome. So awesome. All right. We've teased it out enough, I think. Here we are going to bring in our special guest. We are so thrilled to be joined by our friend and, dare I say, colleague today, because it makes us all sound very smart and cool. He is such a legend in our industry. He almost needs no introduction. And honestly, if we gave him the introduction he deserves, we would just never stop introducing him. We would just do that forever because he's responsible for so many voices you hear in animation and beyond. Friends, please join us in welcoming the wonderful and marvelous Dee Bradley Baker.
Hey, you guys.
Dee Bradley Baker.
Hey, Twitch world.
I'm hearing applause.
Hey, Twitchers. Hi.
I'm applauding. I hear it.
Oh, Dee, I don't know if the people at home can see, but I'm wearing my baby Appa shirt in your honor.
Oh, how sweet. Mm-hmm. That's cool. Mm-hmm. I love merchandise. It always makes me optimistic.
Yeah, guess what? Avatar's doing just fine. There's plenty of merch out there because the show is doing better than ever. And this is something that both of you recorded so many years ago. And yet, for some people, it's like totally new and fresh because they're just seeing it for the first time. So,
well, something that's so good doesn't get old. And the enthusiasm for this world and this beautiful iteration of it that Mike and Brian oversaw and created, it springs eternal. It's a fantastic thing for people who've seen it to watch again and again, and it's also so fun to discover afresh with new children and with your family. It'll never go away.
We've talked a lot, obviously, about your experience, Bosco, but I can't remember how it overlapped with Dee and with him doing these amazing and extraordinary voices. Do you guys, did you meet back then? I mean, were you in the same booth together, or was Dee coming in post and you wouldn't necessarily cross paths?
Dee would come in post. It feels like as I started voiceover work, Dee was always around. Like, I would see him in different studios and because he's like on everything, you know, and definitely for this show. And then even going to Comic-Con, also Dee's just kind of like one of those things to me. Like, not only is he an amazing voice actor and is in everything, he's also very knowledgeable about the world and even about the politics of voice acting and kind of is always there for advice about what's going on. And he's just kind of like, you know, someone I've always asked advice from or asked his point of view on certain things, because Dee, you're very kind of like in tune of what's going on, not just on the creative side, but also on the business aspects of what's going on in the voice acting world.
I've really insinuated myself into voice acting quite effectively.
Yeah, you're so ubiquitous now, and the way Bosco describes it, it's almost like you were just always there. You were just this sort of this presence who was always there in voiceover, but
you weren't always there.
So how did that happen?
Well,
how did you get
you know,
here?
It actually was gradual. It took me 2 or 3 years to start booking stuff regularly in Hollywood. Once I got out there in the end of 93.
Where'd you come from originally?
I lived in a state of denial, actually. I came from.
I've been there. Nice place.
Started in Indiana, grew up in Colorado, and then spent a few years in Orlando before I got my first break, I would call it, doing Legends of the Hidden Temple, the Nickelodeon game show way back then, which some of you may remember. And that got me going out into Hollywood thinking, well, I'd like to do voiceovers, but maybe I could do on camera. I don't really know how it's going to go. And so my wife and I came out to Los Angeles because we were unencumbered by life otherwise, and started it up. And voiceovers was the most amount of fun for the least amount of work and the least amount of effort and the most amount of money, I guess, compared to on camera, which is more of a slog and not as much variety. It's not as much fun. And so I finally kind of pulled the plug on camera and devoted myself to just voiceovers, which started out as being kind of comedic high energy stuff to start, you know, like with Angry Beavers and that kind of stuff. But then gradually I could kind of branched out into doing creature stuff and then more straight ahead stuff, as well. Like Tarlok, for instance, is a pretty straight ahead guy.
Yeah, but, he really is. You would never know that that's the same voice as so many of our creatures on the show.
Good. That's what I want. I really don't want anyone thinking about me when I do anything. I want to be an invisible, aspect to the storytelling. So that's fine with me. I have no problem with the anonymity. In fact, it's my goal is to not just do a good job and to solve whatever the project needs, but I want to be invisible. I want to be an invisible aspect of the solution.
Then I guess it really does make sense that you didn't want to be on camera, because you basically are describing the polar opposite of going and sitting in makeup and then going and getting on camera. And
yeah,
I love
it's
that.
It's a lot of effort and a lot of time that I'd rather be spending it having fun, which is making the show with the voluntary family that is acting, and making something cool. That's the part that I like, that I care about. I really don't care if people I don't want them to. It's like I want to go buy a rutabaga and not be hassled, so I'm okay with it.
What about someone hassling you for buying a rutabaga?
That I'm okay with. That I'm cool with, because I can usually get out of that pretty easily. But
fair.
I'm okay with just showing up at a convention, and sometimes people recognize me there, and sometimes not. But other than that, I don't need the audience or the fans or the fame or any of that. I'm fine with it. I don't bristle at it. But it's just not really a goal in terms of my quality of life.
But will you tell everyone what you were telling Dante and me before we started streaming about being a certain character in a certain amusement park?
Well, when I was in Orlando back around 1990, back in the old days, I was the first walk-around Beetlejuice at Universal Studios in 1990 when they opened up.
That's wild.
The day, I do sketch comedy shows, squeaky clean Disney sketch comedy shows during the day. And then at night, I would don the Beetlejuice makeup and this trench coat, which I would slather with fish. And then I would dumpster dive as Beetlejuice and harass people who were the guests at Universal Studios, which was great fun. It was such fun.
Did they ask
you? You're a method actor.
I know. Thank you. Well, yeah. Were they like, please stop smearing yourself with fish? We never asked you to do that.
No, they loved it. It's only the elderly that don't laugh with Beetlejuice, but everybody else is totally cool with being harassed. They invite it. They invite being harassed by Beetlejuice. They love it.
You do.
That's crazy.
That was a spot on voice. You did a Beetlejuice, and it was.
Hey, come over here. So, What do you say? Are you actually dating this guy or what? Come on. Let's take a picture. Take your time, though.
You know, he's
classic
very,
Keaton. Classic very, Keaton.
Yeah, yeah. It's a fun character to be. I like being that kind of a. I mean, in a way, he's not really human. He's beyond human. He's almost like a Daffy Duck, or just this chaotic presence that doesn't really triumph. And I like being that. There's something in my uptightness that is fulfilled by being the weird like that. That I think that's part of why I get along well with doing creatures and animals. There's a freedom and an authenticity and an honesty to an animal, right? It's like a child. You know, there's no BS. It's utterly honest, whatever is being said or whatever is being communicated. And that as an actor is interesting. Because that's really what I do. Whether I'm doing Beetlejuice or whether I'm being Tarlok or whether I'm doing Appa or Momo or a creature or an animal of any kind, is that it's all acting to me. It's not doing sound effects. It's not doing sounds. It's not about that. Those have to be explored. It's like you're exploring the different instruments in an orchestra, but in order to play it, then you've got to be the musician. Just like for me, you've got to be an actor to make those things useful in storytelling, to make it connect and with the story and communicate the intent and the subtext of what is happening with in visually speaking.
No, the acting and the communication of it, of course, is amazing. How did you get there?
Well, I stumbled into it, slow motion. Really, my career and what I do kind of happened to me. It sort of found me in a non-linear way. And I mean, throughout my life, I liked animals. When I was a kid, I always had, you know, snakes and salamanders and Venus flytraps and sea monkeys and leeches and baby catfish in this tank next to my bed. And I liked animals, right? And then I also liked monster movies. I liked sci-fi, fantasy, everything from Planet of the Apes and Star Trek, which I'm now in. I'm actually in some Star Trek now, which is very exciting for me. And so I liked that. I never thought acting was a career. I thought that was a hobby because I grew up in Colorado. And it's like, how do you have a career as this? How do you have a life as that? So I had this kind of practical antenna that I think I can thank my my Hoosier teacher parents for. But they but in any case, so I studied things and I did things that I liked, that I found interesting. And I was always, especially once I got into high school, I was creating a lot. I was always doing plays and live performing like that. But I was also making stuff that I thought was funny or interesting, you know, making comedy sketch movies with my friends in high school and audio tapes, sketches with friends in college, as well as doing, you know, I've started doing stand-up and improv. But again, not with an angle for a career, but just because it was fun and I liked doing it. And the way it played out for me was that sometimes when you do this, it's fun, but there's no money. And sometimes when you do that, it's no fun, but there's money. And sometimes when you do this, it's fun and there's money. And so what I did is I went with the last of those three. And gradually it kind of found me in it. That it's like, oh, well, I can do live performing. I like doing comedy. I like doing characters. Oh, I like doing voiceovers, actually. Voiceovers is kind of a good fit for me. And then once I got out to Los Angeles, it's like, oh, they like weird stuff. They need monsters and a pet dog and, you know, a robotic ostrich or whatever. And it's like, I have no vanity left, you know, after doing children's theater and stand-up comedy. It's like, I really don't care. I want to go for the weird stuff, the fun stuff. And so I started kind of working on animal sounds and trying to expand my repertoire of sounds that I could use expressively as an actor. And the more I did that, the more I worked doing that.
Wow.
Until it kind of clarified into a specialty of what I do. It's about half of what I do is the weird stuff. I would just call it the weird stuff. I mean, you know, if you see The Suicide Squad right now, I'm Sebastian the Rat, and all the rest of the rats.
Yes, you are.
I'm the rats.
They're so cute.
And there's other stuff coming down the pike too, including the new Star Trek series where I play a blob, and I love.
You've given too much away. You've already given too much away.
I've said too much. I've said too much. So I kind of gradually found it. I was lucky not to be in a mindset where I tried to specialize too early in my life. I think sometimes that can work, where you say, I know what I want to be, and I'm going to become that as quickly and early as possible in my life. But I think for the most part, whatever you think it is that you want to do, and whoever it is you think you are, you've actually got a lot of excavation and a lot of self-discovery yet. And it's going to be probably not, you're going to arrive at a place that you never thought. And it's going to go very differently from what you thought. It's going to go in an improvisational way. Life unfolds in an improvisational way. And I think if you're open to that, which happily I was, and I also had some really good improv experience and training with SAC Theater in Orlando with the likes of Wayne Brady and such. Really brilliant, confident improvisers. And it's like, oh, that's how you do that. I see what that is. I mean, you're each really good at that in a way that's intimidating to me because this is your version of it. And I need to find my version. That's what you do, is you don't, you hang out with other performers who are better than you are, who are more confident and further along. And you realize you gain sustenance from their confidence and their ability without caving into the, oh, I can't do that. Oh, that's intimidating to me. But because you find your own fire, your own flame, and you follow that. And that's the secret for somebody who's got the talent for that, which not everybody does.
I love that. I love his Midwestern perspective and practicality looking at the art. I'm like,
yeah.
Hoosiers.
Oh, Indiana.
Hoosiers, baby. Yeah.
I love the way you look at it. Maybe Hoosier babies.
So you had been in L.A. for, what, like a little over 10 years when Avatar started casting and stuff?
Yeah.
Did you, was that, were you, I mean, was it a thing where you got an audition and there were, it's hard for me to imagine, and this is all due respect to all the other wonderful voice actors who do creature sounds, but I haven't met any of them because I know Dee, you're the one that I always work
with. Yeah, there's
a few. But, you know, was it like, here you go, this is what we need.
Yep.
We're looking for this creature. You saw a picture of Appa and from the jump, and you had to go, all right, well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's.
This creature doesn't exist, so I have to really use my creativity.
Yeah. No, that's the fun and the challenge of it. I remember auditioning for Momo in particular. I was in my garage in Burbank, California, and I remember looking at a sheet. It had a drawing or rendering of it. And just a basic description, it's like, yep, I know I can do sounds like that I think work. And I did, and they liked it. And it was, I don't know if I'd worked with Andrea Romano, our voice director, before that. She was kind of the last voice director. It took me a while for her to know of me or to notice me, because a lot of what she was doing was either like with, I think, like Animaniacs, which had a really strong, versatile cast, and they didn't need me. It's like, I've got that skill set, but they got it covered in spades. Or the superhero stuff, which was more straight ahead, which wasn't really what my default was, and it wasn't how I thought of myself. A lot of it is, I think a lot of an artist's journey, or maybe a human journey, is how do you think of yourself, you know? And then once you find, say, a default that works, so to speak, is that all you are? Is that all there is? If you believe that, if you see that, that will be the case, that you will never get further than that. And so happily, I found ways out from my default to do the weird stuff, to do the straight-ahead stuff, to do a whole range of stuff that I never would have thought of myself capable of. And so part of that, I think, getting back around to it in my own long-winded way, is that I don't think Andrea Romano knew of me or recognized me because I didn't know of me or recognize me. And so that was, I think, my takeaway from that.
Very zen. Very zen, D.
Absolutely. And I will say, too, that, you know, you give yourself a hard time for talking about this, but this is exactly what people are looking for and want, and you know, and now I'm chiding you, and you know that, Dee, you know that, because in doing these conventions and in being available to people at conventions and beyond, you have the same experience that people like Dante and I have, which is people are really interested in becoming involved in voiceover, perhaps for all the reasons that you've described. You know, it's a very different beast than doing on-camera stuff, and it has an anonymity to it that's kind of delicious. And so even sometimes really shy people who we meet at Comic-Cons are sort of like, I love this, and this feels like a way I could express myself and not necessarily be self-conscious about. And so you started a website that now your peers also use as a resource, iwantabeavoiceactor.com. I mean, I must talk about that website to fans and others at least once a week.
I literally just gave it to two people at the last con this last weekend. I was at, in Atlanta. I was like, you need to Google D. Bradley Baker and go to iwantabeavoiceactor.com. It's going to answer everything you need to know. I mean, you've become an encyclopedia for your peer, for your friends that everyone asks us questions. For 100%, Varney.
Well, it started from very selfish motivations.
Where it's 'cause people,
'cause everybody gets asked that question, as you know. And then if you're going to give an honest answer, it's going to take like an hour or two to kind of unpack that for everybody who asks. And for me, it's just like, look, I don't have 2 hours to talk this to anybody who wants to know. 'Cause most people, they're just mildly curious or they don't have any talent. But there are some that are more than curious and that have good talent. And so it's like, well, and how do I know? I don't know what anybody is. So the best way to get this information out is to make a website. And so I just put it out there without really thinking of it. But I just listened. I just listened through Mark Andreessen's book, Free, which is about the free economy of giving things away as we shifted into the internet age. And that was about that time where it's like, you know, I could monetize this, but or like write a book or something like that. But I'm earning a living doing what I like as voice actor, and I don't want to mess with publishing or I'm just going to give this away. I'm just going to put out everything that I think so I can be the blowhard that I am and be this know-it-all expert, you know, and I can do it on my terms. I can say whatever I want, and nobody can control me because I derive no monetary benefit from it whatsoever. This is perfect. I'm going to do this. and so I created my iwanttobeavoiceactor.com, starting with just, you know, a few pages, little bullet points, and it just continued on. So it's I continually add to it. I keep refining it. And most people who go there, I think, probably look at it and just go, oh, God, this is just so much to read. Ugh, no, I'm gonna.
It's a reference. It's a reference. It's like a reference book for all of us.
Well, like an encyclopedia almost. Yeah.
I hope so. I've had a lot of experience doing a variety of performing in my life. I haven't done everything. I'm not a trained actor.
You were Beetlejuice.
I was Beetlejuice, by gosh, but I've done a lot of different kinds of performing. And a lot of voice actors, if you ask any voice actor, you know, where did you think this was going to go in your life or how did you become this? And everyone's going to say something different. Some are trained. Some are musicians. Some are comedians. Some come from improv. Some come from, you know, a whole mishmash of things. Some things not necessarily even related to acting. So yeah. It can go a lot of different ways. And I've tasted a lot of those soups. So it's like, well, I'm going to lay out everything that I've seen. And maybe that can be of help to people. Maybe it'll be inspiring and helpful to those who are right for this. Because acting is not a zero sum game. Acting is fundamentally collaborative. I want other good actors to compete against and to work with. That selfishly serves me. I want that. So I'm not just gonna hold my cards to my chest and not tell anyone else how to get in. Into the golden circle or anything like that, because I think anybody who can who has the talent and the focus and the luck, they can get in. They can make a go of it. It's going to take a while. Takes persistence and all that, but it's possible. And frankly, I want new people to work with. I want new people to compete against with. I want new people to beat me in auditions because it makes shows better. It makes the storytelling that we as human beings do better. And that's great. That's a win for everybody.
Listen, that is a major call to action for everybody watching on Twitch right now, for everyone listening to this at home. Feel free to rise to that occasion and jump in and let's start beating D. Bradley Baker out of all these roles. Get him out of here.
Just become yourself and have fun. That's what I follow your weirdness. There's another one. You gotta follow your weirdness. Don't try to fit in.
I grew up studying. That's like kind of Avatar-esque. Is like seek out a master, become a master, pass it on. That's the cycle. Oh, that's the cycle that we're supposed to be doing, and it's so beautiful to hear.
Seek out multiple masters.
Oh yeah, so of course multiple masters.
Then kill the Buddha on the road. Find another master.
We forget that we're supposed to pass it on. You know, sometimes we just kind of want to hoard it for ourselves, but no, pass it on.
That's the ethic of being an actor is like I said, the voluntary family is like you want to help out everybody. It's like if everybody's together telling a good story, the story lives and everybody benefits. It's not right. I'm going to have my part of the story work and your part not so much. It's like, no, we've all got to win. Yeah. That's part of the optimism and the fun of being an actor to me is exactly Absolutely. That kind of open collaborative nature, which is it's not as pronounced maybe in on camera. Maybe it's a little.
Yeah, so I was going to tell you the same thing. In competition, the competition of art, something with our community as voiceover acting, and of course we all go back and forth on screen and voice acting, and me and Barney talked about this in the past. Somehow within the voice acting community, we're so much more collaborative, and you don't take it as personal if someone gets a job that you don't get, or vice versa. Whereas when we're dealing with on screen and your visual, it's so much more personal if you don't get the job, or at least the ego feels that way. So I really love being a part of the voice acting community to have more of that, and I think that should spread throughout the rest.
Well,
of the
I think part of
sure.
that is the toxicity of fame, and it's the toxicity of big money. Those two factors make on camera a much more fraught proposition for any creative. And the younger you are, the worse it is, because I think you should get involved with acting or arts. Maybe you want to become a professional, but you get into it because you love it, because it's fun, because you like the collaboration, and you can't lose that aspect. If it all becomes about money and cutthroat and competition, you lose the art, you lose the fun, and it becomes a grim success.
Yeah. Ooh, a grim success. That's so haunting and scary, yet so true.
There's a lot of haunting and scary in on camera.
There's a lot. We want to ask the audience, what is your favorite animal? Again, revisiting that this is where we are in the series, about halfway through. What's your favorite animal from the following list? Appa? Momo? Otter penguin?
Or the unagi?
Unagi makes me hungry.
I mean, I have had some unagi sushi.
He's the only creature so far that I'd actually sit down and eat.
We had a whole conversation with Jack DeSena about whether he, Asaka, wanted to eat every animal or it's just a handful.
Oh,
well, while we
him.
Wait to hear from everybody, Dee, what is your favorite if you had to pick a favorite from those four? Appa, Momo, Otter Penguin, or Unagi?
Well, let's see. How do I choose between Momo and Appa is my question. I don't.
Yeah.
You
met Appa first.
Met Appa first. I mean, they're both kind of super dependable, intelligent, good-hearted creatures. I think maybe if the question is which one would I rather have around,
sure.
Then I'm going to say I think I'd like to have Momo hopping around my house. If it were Appa, Appa would have to sit outside much of the time, and I wouldn't be able to interact with him as much. But Momo is going to be hopping around my shoulder, flying around the house.
True.
That sounds like fun. So I'm gonna have to go with that if I have to choose.
That's not a bad choice. I mean, you're right. The practicality of where would Appa sleep?
I've got some space for him, but it's a big. Yeah. He's a big creature, and you got to clean up after him too. Now that I'm thinking
about
it.
That's true.
But
I love that he just has nothing but molars. He just has molars from the front to the back on both levels.
Oh,
just perfect square teeth. Perfect square teeth.
No, Appa just has... He's a vegetarian, Appa. He's a vegetarian. All
You're right.
All day is...
Yeah. Momo's probably omnivorous. Appa is just going to chew grass and weeds and things.
People are asking, who was more fun, Momo or Appa to voice?
Great question.
Well, Momo's more nimble, and there's a wider range of stuff going on with him, so probably Momo.
See?
He's a fun little
I'm still dude. Amazed
it's
when
so
I see it come out of your head.
So
when I see it come out of your head, D, I'm
it's
always
just
like,
not
what?
Even, it's not like he has to get in the zone or, like, eat a certain vegetable to, like, get stretched out. Or it just flows out.
No,
it's,
my creatures
it's
are right beneath the surface. They're all there.
They're right there. And it looks like we know who won, too, right, Bosco?
That's who won. Appa. Appa's the winner. Oh my God.
He got a standalone episode. He's pretty awesome.
Is it a library in your mind, all these sounds? Are the characters and the sounds you like categorize somewhere in your brain?
Yeah, it's
your
like
hard drives.
It feels like the instruments of an orchestra, and I can see them. I know how they feel, and I know where they're located, and I can just reach and pick it up, and I've got it. And then I can, and I can mix them sometimes. I can kind of do a MIDI mix and mix them together. And
was there ever an animal on The Last Airbender that you sort of saw, and at that first moment went, "Oh boy, where am I going to start with this one?" Or did it always feel more kind of organic than that? Were they always speaking to you at the same level, kind of feasibility?
I don't remember anything that stumped me. I mean, I usually have a strong idea of what I'm going to do, and as I remember, usually Mike and Brian or Andrea liked what my first idea was, but sometimes they would modify that. Sometimes my first idea was not quite it. And because sometimes, like, my performance is the thing, but then it also needs some modification or sweetening by the sound designer, and it's just sort of like this, it's like sourdough starter, you know, where you've got the basic meat of it to start, but then you have someone else add seasoning and maybe pitch it a little bit, or maybe add some reverb or mix in another sound with it, or, you know, it's so, I sometimes... and a lot of the times, most of the time, I think it's just what I'm doing. But then other times, it's a collaborative sound, I guess you'd call it.
Actually, Dee, I feel like when we discussed this with Jeremy and Rishi in our music episode, it was kind of established that nobody had anything to do with the sounds that you were making. I mean, there was very little sweetening. They were very much you.
Well, that's my goal with my specialization, is I want to introduce... not only a solution, but an efficient solution. I want this to be the easiest and quickest possible. And if I can deliver everything in one package right now vocally, that's the most efficient. That's what everybody would want. That's what the show creators and the sound designers, everybody wants, is to get what they need quickly. And that's the value of what I bring, or a good actor brings, is that you deliver a compelling, irresistible solution or performance that's like, that's it. We don't need to do 10 takes. We don't need to do 20 takes. We do maybe one take or two, and we got it. That's what you want. And that's why you pay for to have a union
actor. The big bucks.
Well, it's not small change, but, I mean, for us, it's mostly scale, union scale, which is minimum. But it's not small amount of money, and I'm still aware of it. I mean, even though most of my work as a voice actor is scale still. It is for voice acting. That's part of one of the characteristics of the career. But even with that, you want to deliver the best that you can as efficiently and as possible.
I'm excited for us to deliver the best that we can. I feel like it's time for...
Is it time?
I don't know why I'm preparing my hair. Like, I need to slick it down as if I'm about to get really serious about what's about to happen. But Dee, would you be open to picking some animals, maybe like four animals that you can try and teach Dante and I? I can't even get through it without laughing. It's going to be so bad.
I'm reading this in our notes here and I'm like, what are we doing? Why are we doing
That's
this?
That's on you, buddy. If you didn't know that I was planning on making Dee teach us how to do voices.
Well, I mean, obviously, Dee, so favorite animals, outside of Momo and Appa, like, you did all the animals. Any animals that kind of stick out to you that you really liked, and then maybe you can teach us?
I like those kind of...
teach us one or two of those things.
I love
it. What are
they
called? It's like a...
Because I ain't doing no Momo or Appa. I ain't doing no Momo. I'm not messing with Momo, Appa.
Then we get to decide that. Dee has to tell us what we're going to do.
We ain't going to be doing those then. We could...
Oh, you got lucky.
How about those... it's like these two-legged horse things, right? You remember those that people ride around on a lot?
Yeah.
Anybody at home want to name that animal?
What are those called? It's like a horse ostrich or something.
Well,
every animal is like a hybrid.
Close. Yep.
In the universe of
it might
Avatar.
Be like a horse ostrich or something. Like you said, it was a horse ostrich.
But can you picture
let's
that? It's kind of got a horsey head with seeming like a beak, as I remember, and then a body that's similar. It's like this, you know, Swiss Family Robinson ostrich that you can ride around on, actually.
Yes, which, indeed. Side Guess note. What? Ostrich horse.
Side note.
Thank you, everybody at home.
Ostrich horse.
Right.
Okay, good. Okay. Side note, it's fascinating to watch, an old movie like Swiss Family Robinson, where they made the actors actually ride on an ostrich.
I know.
Which these days you would never, ever do. But it's like, oh, he's really doing that stunt. The dad is actually on a rope and going over the waterfall, and the kid is actually riding an ostrich. It's like, wow. That's,
Just hold on.
Yeah.
Just hold on.
Yeah. All right. So the ostrich horse.
Oh, it's no.
I do that with an inhale, which is a.
Okay.
So basically, if you want to get down to the very basics of animal utterances, there's either I break it down. One way to break it down is inhales and exhales. So
okay.
With growls and things, it's a ha, 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 ha. So that's, I'm using a lot of the throat, not just the voice. If you just use the voice, you'll be coughing like you're doing, and it hurts.
Yeah, that's wrong.
Don't do that. You want to do it in a way that doesn't hurt yourself, but it gives the expression. And one way to do that is to put the sound into the throat, the flesh of the throat and the mouth and the soft palate. But for this creature, for the ostrich horse, let's start with the inhale, and I'll work my way. Let's work our way into it.
And listeners and people at home, I hope everybody is doing this with us, because that will distract you from what we're doing. So feel free to join in.
Everybody
and
at home,
in fact,
play along.
I beg you to join in.
Join us, won't you? You start with an inhale, like a lot of people will have like a pig or something that they can do, like a. So I end up kind of putting it up
people?
In my. Well, if someone says do a pig sound, they might go reet reet, or they might go with an inhale, and that's how I'm doing this creature, is okay. With. See, I'm not. Imagine that there's like a place that I center the sound.
Okay.
And I can start here like a, or I can go lower like a. Up in my nose. And then if I don't think I'm being very helpful, am I?
I would go oink. How about oink? Does oink work?
I'm around the corner nailing.
How about an earth pig? Maybe we can start.
No, we're doing
ostrich horse.
I'm full on committed to ostrich horse.
Give us the final version of the ostrich horse that Dante and I are going to try to do.
Well, the final version of that, as I remember, is kind of a. So I'm doing an inhale.
Yes.
I'm going to throw up on myself. Let's try it.
Okay, I'm ready.
An inhale up, Chuck.
Inhale. So you inhale.
It's going in through my mouth, but I'm,
like a
I'm
pig
opening
sound.
Up my chamber, the chamber, the secret alien chamber behind my nose. So it's a.
Opening the secret tunnel to the head.
The secret tunnel up in my nose.
Am I doing it? I'm not doing it.
I'm going to tell you one thing.
Janet,
I'm
are you breathing
very...
in or out?
I'm breathing in, D. How dare you?
I have a very sensitive gag reflux, so it's not the best for creature sounds.
All right, well, you're going to have to get past that, otherwise the ostrich horse will not be able to call its friends.
Ladies and gentlemen. Okay, should we try?
Okay.
I have an idea.
Let's go elsewhere. Well,
Let's try. Let's. Me and Jan will give one try at it.
Okay.
And then we can go elsewhere.
You didn't hear me trying?
I want to say,
That's
ladies
so
and gentlemen.
Of you.
Janet, ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the ostrich horse.
We're having an.
Let me say, I started out off the rails, and yet somehow I derailed even more, but I was never on the rails. How can you derail when you're never on the rails to begin with?
Oh, my goodness. We're just showing everybody how great
the high bar has been set, Dante.
That's right. We can't lose. All no right, matter what,
my,
we're still
my
showing
eyes are
how
watering
is.
From laughing right now. Okay.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, people of all the world, please welcome Dante Bosco as Ostrich Horse.
What were you doing with your nose there?
I was trying to bring the air into my...
You were trying to find a nasal workaround.
I was trying to get into the secret tunnel of my nose.
You were pointing to the air so that it would know which orifice to enter?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm like a dead ostrich horse.
Okay, well, we nailed that. So D's out of a job he'll never do another
it.
Ostrich horse. What's the next one you're going to subject us to?
Give us another one. Give us another one. I'm going to get the better on the next one. I promise.
Okay. Next up, let's go with an exhale. And I want to show you Appa, even though you said we shouldn't do Appa, but let's do that because it's a really interesting sound.
In advance, I'm so sorry.
Okay, we apologize. Apologies to Appa.
Sorry, Appa.
So, what I'm doing with Appa is I'm using a lot of the throat to make like a nasal nasal growl that I then give more resonance to because I block my nose. So instead of a, it's a.
Dante, you get to do a nose thing.
Now, you can block your nose finally.
You said I go into my throat to do the nasal. It's just the mathematics got me all confused right there.
Dante, just go like this. I'm ready.
All right.
I'm kind of
using my soft palate as an artificial voice box. Like the voice box is muscles, right? And instead of using that, I'm using my soft palate and what flaps around inside behind my nose.
I don't know how much that happens loose back there, but I will definitely try.
Oh, yeah. Well, the soft palate's very... Right? And you can... Okay, good. But you direct this kind of a growling lower resonance up into your nose, and then you block it off. So it's like... It's not just a... I'll show you the progression of it.
It's choking like, myself! Gee, I'm choking myself!
Please
poor,
don't.
You poor man. I'm not even using my voice when I do that. I'm using all this up here to make that low growl. Right? And then I block it off.
That sounds good!
Try to place it as much as you can up in your head, up in your sinuses. Not here and not down here, but it goes up here. That's
I sound like Yoda's being tortured. That can't be right.
Oh.
I've never thought to myself, you know how Appa sounds like Yoda's being tortured.
I don't know what's going on.
You guys are nailing it. You're killing it.
I got some.
Thank
ladies
you.
And gentlemen, Janet
Thank
Varney
you.
As Appa.
Okay. I can't even do it. No. No.
That
was not bad, though. I mean,
that's
no,
very good.
It was bad.
That could have been Appa's cousin that was, like, hanging out in the, you know.
Yeah. Let me hear Appa's other cousin. Let me hear Appa's
this
second cousin.
Appa's Filipino cousin.
That's right.
Here we go.
That's right.
Well, you can't laugh now.
Okay, I'm not gonna laugh.
Oh.
Oh my god. He's tired.
That's the sound of genuine pity. D's making the sound of genuine heartfelt pity at us.
It's like you're strangling yourself or you're hurting yourself. I don't want to.
What's
want you to
crazy,
hurt yourself,
D, is that we're recording this for people to see and
it
hear
will live
forever.
Forever.
What are
people,
we doing?
Do people want to see this?
I mean, don't know.
Listen, oh that's what goodness. Editing's for, but I'm telling you right now, it's all staying in. All right, D, what's our third animal? What's our third animal?
What did, Jennifer Hale's character drove around, I think it's called a shearshoe?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it
right?
is. Shearshoe, yeah.
Oh, I Those really like that animal.
Yeah,
and that's got a lot of snuffling and kind of growling. Yeah.
I feel good about this. I feel like I can snuffle.
Okay, so snufflage is affected by I arch the tongue in the back, and then I breathe air in and out audibly from my puckered lips. So I've never had to describe this before. So it's that probably looks hideous.
No, it looked brilliant.
So I'm not only doing kind of a like that, mm-hmm, which mm-hmm. I'm doing just really just with my tongue. I'm not really doing it with my lungs.
Oh.
And then I'm also using my soft palate to make growling, snorty sounds. Like, it's like apnea or snoring, right?
Yeah.
It's flapping that around. Everybody can
I
do that.
I don't have much access to my soft palate. I don't think.
Well, let's
you got
let's
a velvet rope between you and that soft palate that we're going to have to get
me and that soft palate aren't communicating too
I
well.
I
want right
to wake
now.
Up a relationship with your soft palate.
Wake
between
up,
you
soft
two.
Palate.
Between you
that's
both.
Right.
Yes. You and your soft palate.
Okay.
So, yeah, so it really, the soft palate and can be used to effect some really cool snarling effects. That's where I'm. See, yeah, I'm touching the tip of my tongue behind the front of my teeth, behind my front teeth, and I'm breathing in, and then if I put the back of my tongue against my soft palate, you get a like that, and you can do it both ways, both in and out.
I'm choking myself again, D.
Right. Well, don't. But I'm using the flesh in my throat to make these horrible sounds, but not using my voice.
Yes. Right.
I'm going easy on myself, but finding the sound in a way that still delivers a really interesting sound, but that doesn't hurt me. If I'm just using my voice for a lot of this, it would really hurt. If I do a monster, then it's a like that. But if I use the flesh of my throat and the resonance, I can do a like that.
Yeah.
And I'm there's some voice in that, but a lot of it's just my face, the inside of my head.
Okay. All right. Listen, you've given us too much instruction.
It's way too much.
Only in the sense that it's not going to make us do it any better. That's all I'm saying. So we're going to try to do that, and then I want to honor the chat because they definitely want to hear a cute animal. That's subjective. Some of us might think that, you know, but maybe like a chittery, more of a chitter. I think that's probably what they mean is maybe something more of a Momo type chitter because we worked on some snuffles. So just keep that in the back of your mind while we do this. I'm going to introduce the world to what I can only assume is going to be one of the best sheer shoes ever done, ever. And there only has been one other one done that I know of, and that's
Bring
by Steve Bradley.
Bring the sheer shoe.
So this
Let's
is
go.
The second one. Okay, here we go. Huh?
Great.
That was pretty good. Here comes his friend. Here Excellent. Comes his friend.
Oh, here comes his friend. Dante, stop snoring and wake up. Wake up and do the sound.
No vocals used. I just used soft palate. That was soft palate. That was soft palate style right there. That
Beautiful.
Was just snoring
Beautiful.
And snuffing.
Beautiful.
It's,
all right.
It feels weird to use these parts of your voice, and especially as an actor, because you just don't mess around with that stuff. But a lot of what I did is I would just drive around messing around with what the sounds I can make until it became familiar and in ways that was useful to storytelling.
Well, you're going to have us close on your heels in about 15 years of us driving around trying to come up with sounds. So
all
watch
right,
out.
Then.
In 15 years, we're coming for you, buddy. Let's end with a fourth animal, and then we want to hear from the chat which one they think Dante and I did the impersonation of the best, and I can't wait to find out. And by the way, I expect everyone to abstain from voting because we did all of them so bad.
Yes. And a cute animal. What cute animal?
Yeah, let's do something
on,
small and sweet. Let's start with, it's kind of a baby sound, like a... Good.
Okay.
Yeah, it's almost like a little bird. And then you can add an undulating uvula to that to make it
what?
A... That's your... you know, the back... It's like gargling.
Oh, I've never been good at that.
Like that. like a it's almost like a Wookiee thing, but it's small. And you just dial that in while you're making the little sound that you're of the baby.
This water is gonna help. That's really good. Wait, that's D.
That ain't me. That ain't me, Barney. Aww. That's D.
I thought it was you.
I fooled you.
I'm cheating because I'm doing it as a trill with my tongue.
You're trilling
the
front. That's fine.
Tongue.
That can work too. Good. Now the key to any of this is you're not making a sound. You're telling part of a story, and so there's intent. So, like, if the little creature is snuggling in, maybe it's a. So you can think of like a puppy or a baby while you're doing it. And if it's distressed, it can be a. So you have in your mind an event that's happening while you're making the sound. Then it comes alive.
Right. Okay. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Janet Varney as the. What kind of animal was that?
Let's call it a squink.
A squink.
A squink. A squink, but the squink is cuddling up to its mother.
Okay. Yes.
Huh? There it is. There it is. That was amazing. I love that.
Wonderful.
I'm a squink, everyone. I'm a squink. Well, this little Filipino squink is in danger, feeling a little bit threatened and a little worried about its safety.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's a lot of different stuff going on. No, hold on a second. No, we have no idea. What's going on right now?
That sounds like a squink that's being threatened, but I think it worked. I think
I think I was being threatened. I think being threatened.
I heard
I'm like regressing back into acting class right now, going, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, I agree.
But I'm having a good time doing it.
D, please also let us know which one you did the best job with. But before you do, because we don't want to tip the scales in our poll, we would love to know what kind of bender you would be. We're going back. Well, we're not just going human. I guess Appa's a bender. But what kind of bender would you be in life if you could bend?
I'm going to go with airbending. I like. Wait a minute.
That makes sense.
I think that'd be the most practical. It seems like fun to me to transport around on a ball of air like Aang does, and that sounds like fun and also very useful. I think I admire the earthbending though the most in terms of in battle. There's just no battle in my
very
life,
strong
at least
it's very
so far.
Strong.
But yeah. I so love what Toph did and the endlessly innovative battle scenes that Mike and Brian would come up with were particularly impressive to me with the earthbending.
Yeah, they're
amazing. That's a great point. That's an absolutely great point.
But I can see you as an airbender for sure. And plus, all the sounds you do is a manipulation of air, so you are actually an airbender anyway. Anyhow.
That's true. That's such a great point. Bosco, you nailed it. That's exactly right.
Wow.
Those firebenders aren't bad either, D.
Oh, stop it. Don't. He tries to get everybody
They're
to
all
join in.
Really
he
cool.
wants people to convert over to firebending. But unfortunately, you shot yourself in the foot, Bosco, because you realizing that D is an airbender in real life is genius. D, we know what our audience poll results were for the animal impressions that we did. What do you think we did best at?
I'm going to go with Squink. I think Squink was the most dead on of all of them. They were all very good.
Janet's Squink was great. I got to admit, your Squink was great.
Oh, you were fantastic.
I had a hard time committing. I'm not going to lie. I had a hard time committing, D. You're sitting next to the master, and I've had a hard time
You felt threatened because you were commitment phobic, so it worked.
Tell my therapist about my commitment phobias. Tell my girlfriend about that.
It worked great. This has been so much fun. Dee, thank you so much. I want to give a quick shout out to your daughter, Cora, who did the voice of little Cora when she says, I'm the Avatar and you got to deal with it.
That's right.
That
amazing.
Was
daughter
your
Cora.
Daughter, Cora.
She's,
what's
she's
happening?
Now a
was
junior
Cora
in
named
high
after
school.
Cora? I mean, was
what?
Our Cora named after your Cora?
No, that's actually
total coincidence.
It's a really odd coincidence, but it was a total coincidence that they had the audition for young Cora My daughter's a Cora with a C. Yeah. But the show was already up and running. It was already written and was being made. And they sent over the audition, and I said, yeah, I think let's I directed her in the audition, and she nailed it beautifully. She was up against a lot of very good voice actors, a number of women, you know, because often women voice children.
Sure.
And they went with the child. She did the opening Cora episode, and then there was one more later on.
I was there
Cora
for the other one.
Goes back to visit her younger self.
Yes.
That was really, I mean, there's a lot of really great acting in there, and she's a great actor. She's
a
great performer.
She was so great. I remember saying at the time, she is more professional and talented than I am now. Like, she just, no surprise, because look at who her dad is, but her intuitive skills were just off the chart. It was so amazing. So, yeah, I wanted to make sure everyone knew that.
We all start out as good actors, right? Where we have our subtext very clearly in hand, and we just very honestly and authentically go for what we want. That's what an actor is. Also, a child has no problem with pretending and committing to pretend, and that is also acting. So there are many kids, most kids can do that. They do that. I mean, we spontaneously act. We spontaneously, you know, make up stories and pretend worlds that we insert ourselves into and play out. This is what humans do. So I mean, one of the best improvisers I ever saw on a stage was a kid that was, you know, throwing out crazy ideas from the audience, and he must have been like 10 or something. And so they said, okay, well, let's bring him up on the stage. And it's like, he's committing to these stories as well as any of these seasoned improvisers, and he's just as funny. And it's like, yep, that's because we're an improvisational, performing, story-creating creature. That's what we are.
Oh, that's so true. Way to accidentally reveal themselves, the adult improvisers, as kids, because that's what we always say. We're like, well, we're basically, we get to stay kids. That's our job. So why don't we get a handful of questions from our viewers, and we will get them fed into our chat.
But by the way, the audience agrees with you, D, that the squink won. Squink won, you guys.
All right. It's an objective decision then.
So we got a question. I don't know who it's from, but it says, what's your favorite animal? Nose?
Probably noise.
Is it noise
but...
or nose?
Oh, but maybe, listen, I would love to hear if it's nose also, because animals
My favorite animal
have real
nose
cute noses.
Is an elephant. I mean, I like elephant noses a lot. Those are pretty cool. Wish I had that.
Have you voiced an elephant?
Yeah, I've done some elephants. They're hard to do, because let me show you something.
Okay.
Ooh, this is very exciting.
So, I recently did... This is the first time I've done this, and I've never shown this to anybody. I got a drain spout for my drain spout in my house, and I have an extra one because I thought maybe I can do something with it. And I was asked to do the sound of a mammoth, and so I thought, I could use, you know, like I like to modify resonance, like with that. I was like, how about this, baby? So I went.
Oh my goodness.
That's fabulous.
That is amazing.
I love that it's the thing that it looks like the thing that it's sounding like in your trunk.
And so and it worked. The showrunner liked that idea, so we did. We did the mammoth as that. Sometimes I'll use a device
amazing.
Like that. You know, if it works, I'll try it.
Oh, it works like a charm. A little.
There's all kinds of things just lying around the house. Just
audience wants to know, D, what do you do if you have a cold or stuffy nose?
That usually helps it. That gives me more resonance. It gives
really?
Me a thicker sound. It
more mucus.
Yeah, mucus is great.
So it's the opposite. It's basically the opposite of everything when you're doing a human voice that a voice actor wants to avoid. It's like, bring it on.
I want that edge and the depth and the deepness and the rasp. Those are all elements that I can use. My job is not to speak like an actor all day long. It's to go. That's what I do. And so a cold only helps that.
I just want to say, while we were talking about this, I accidentally got mucus in my throat and I had to clear my throat, which I think means I am a real life mucus bender because I conjured mucus. So I am a mucus bender.
You're bending mucus.
I found my calling. This is very exciting. For the person who asked advice for beginner voice actors, I'm going to say we're going to channel you back to that beautiful website, iwantabeavoiceactor.com. Truly, nice. Check it out. It is awesome.
It's so all there.
You've got the whole encyclopedia waiting for you. And it's totally free.
Totally free.
What else you got, Bosco?
More questions. User StoryPaint asked, D, do you go to the zoo for research to mess with the animals?
Those could be two different answers.
Or to mess with the animals. You could talk to them,
know? I've gone to zoos. I also watch nature documentaries.
Leah Pep asked, what's your favorite memory or moment of working on the show or shows? Legend of Korra or Avatar?
Okay, that's hard to narrow down. I really remember and treasure the devastating final scene that we recorded between the two brothers at the end of the first season of Legend of Korra. It was me and Steve Bloom as these doomed brothers, and it was this scene that I couldn't believe that they were allowing it, that they were going to do it and animate it, but they did. It's very tragic and very kind of disturbing. I've never seen anything like that.
And you and Steve. I love you and Steve as brothers. That was so cool.
Yeah, it really meant a lot.
Foreshadow report.
I also really, I mean, the whole experience of working with Andrea Romano was such an honor and a privilege and a delight. I really miss her presence as a voice director.
Oh, this has been so wonderful. Dee, I hope you'll come back. I feel like there's so much we still want to discuss, and we have so many more episodes of the show to recap, and you're so amazing. I know how busy you are.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Dee. I miss you. It's great seeing you.
I miss you guys very much. I hope we get to work together soon.
Yes. No, I hope so, too. It's so fun just embarrassing ourselves, doing some sounds. I can't believe we did that, but it's amazing.
And I was very gratified with the character, the secret tunnel character of Chong, that they threw to me and sent me a little demo song. And I listened
to
the demo song.
Pause for applause.
Secret tunnel. That's right. And they didn't know what they wanted. And they sent me this demo to a song, and I listened to it. I thought, that's a terrible song. I don't know what I can do with this. I don't think this is going to work. And I went in. And so I went in and started kind of messing with it. And very quickly, it's like, this kind of he's an offhanded kind of throw it off kind of a guy. Yeah, hi. And he throws in, I mean, he's just enjoying life, and relaxed. And he and his trippy friends are tripping around.
Yes.
And then I hear the more produced song. And just kind of sang along with it in this offhanded, trippy person kind of a way, and it's just one of my favorite things that I think I did in all of the Avatar universe, in all of the Airbender universe, and the best part is that people love that song and love that character so much, even though it's not really his story, it's not about him, he's incidental to it, but it's like the cabbage guy, everyone just goes nuts for the cabbage guy.
My it's cabbages. Like,
it's something about him that just hits a chord. So it's nice to hit something that comes out of left field, and maybe you didn't even see it coming, which I certainly didn't. But once you find it, it's like, this is cool. This actually works. And people respond to it. And, sometimes it just stays a one-off like him. Sometimes they'll start, there's a few shows I've done where I found something and they start working it into every episode because they just like that character so much.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I mean, that's such a classic. We might have to end the show with a performance of Secret Tunnel. I've been asked to sing it myself, and I didn't sing it in the show, and people have like hit me on Cameo or at cons like, can you please sing Secret Tunnel?
What is it?
I'm like, why?
Two lovers.
Forbidden from one another.
Another mountain.
A war divides their people.
And a mountain keeps them apart.
Keep them apart.
Built a path to be together. And there's some other words I can't remember. And then it's secret tunnel.
Secret tunnel.
through the mountain. Secret tunnel.
Yeah.
We ended strong. We finished strong, everybody. We finished strong.
Animals are a little dicey, but secret tunnel we got. We got that down.
Secret tunnel forever.
Thank you so much.
Before we go, Dee, is there anything we can help promote?
I'll just mention there's a great new Star Trek series that's coming out on Paramount Plus, actually, I think it is, that's beautiful, and it looks really great, and I play a blob in it. Star Trek Prodigy, it's called, I believe.
Star Trek Prodigy. Check it out. Got to enjoy that glob that is Dee Bradley Baker and the amazing human being that is Dee Bradley Baker. And next week, guess what? We have hit our mid-season point. So to celebrate, we are going to be throwing our first superfan quiz show. That's right, with four superfans who actually are probably listening to this outro right now because that's how big of superfans they are. Hi, guys, you know who you are. Anyway, more to come next week. It's going to be super fun. Don't miss it.
See everybody next Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.